This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.
All right, so next up, legislative discussion. How are our favorite gladiators tonight? You guys ready to get thrown into the arena?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Good. I'll speak for myself. I don't know about Marilyn, but I'm ready to go.
I'm ready.
Good.
Yep. Looking forward to it.
So, Travis, as the chairman of the board, I want to say thanks. Thank you guys for coming here tonight. In front of you, you should have kind of a list of bills that was presented to me today at the Superintendents Association meeting, virtual meeting. You'll see there's some green highlights that we have that I just kind of highlighted. We just kind of had a general conversation about. Yeah, I had to put it on one sheet in order for you to see it instead of 15 multiple ones. But like always, again, these are just, a lot of these bills probably won't even make it to the floor. But tonight is a great opportunity maybe for you to ask some questions. Travis is the chairman. We are planning to go down that
February
1st to 2nd. We'll go down on the 1st. Barry has agreed to give us a tour. Marilyn has agreed to join us, but to do dinner Saturday night and then Sunday morning, maybe do some things and then go to the School Boards Association training that afternoon, Sunday afternoon, and then return Monday late afternoon. So that's still kind of on the schedule, and they said they would be willing to do that. So
excellent. Okay. Thank you, guys. The tour is always awesome. I learn something new every time.
So if you would want me to lead the discussion, or maybe you guys have some questions with that, but the reality for me, there's some things that you see highlighted. I've asked our state leadership to really to focus on that $4.5 million. I keep saying only $450,000. It's $4.5 million that was approved for the KC project. For the HVAC system to make sure we watch that through legislation so that gets funded appropriately with that. So that's probably number one priority for us as a district. That's a huge project. It's funding from the state to help support some of our buildings. So that was number one to watch that to make sure everything passes with that. The next one is we talked about that 30% to 15% carryover to make sure that sunset bill is something. So they both agreed to, you know, that that's something that's they know it's coming back forward and we work with that. The other pieces that we have here, we can kind of go through some of those eventually. But again, I'm not here to do all the talking. So Marilyn, Barry, if you have some things you would like to say and then questions from you guys, and then I can quickly hit the highlights of the green.
Perfect.
You want to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. I don't have a whole lot. I'm still learning the how the school funding model works and all the different aspects of that that you have to deal with on a daily basis and how it affects your budgeting and all of those things. So the one that I had marked was House Bill 31, and that's the school safety and security bill that's coming out. And I was telling Superintendent Oski that in speaking with the fire department today, they are offering it. They are opposed to that bill.
The fire department?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Okay. Well, it's a...
Because they don't get a veto on the locking mechanism, right? The fire marshal typically can say, you can't use that lock because we might not be able to get in.
Yeah.
This would say, to secure the school buildings, they can use any lock that they want.
Yeah.
And you guys help me if I didn't say that right or if I'm in the
Or they can use lock to device.
To divide, yeah.
So their concern's not with the locks. There's concerns with the devices that might be used in a lockdown situation, especially in an active shooter that wouldn't allow emergency services to enter a room if they need to.
So it seems like a school safety and security sounds really good, right? We all want that, right? But there's just some things in this one that need to be tracked. Okay, so that was one that I had highlighted.
And is this talking to like enter the building, or is this an individual, like actual individual classrooms, or is it both?
It could be both.
It could be both.
It could be.
Oh.
And then the other thing to remember about this particular bill is it requires the districts to actually do affirmative policy work ahead of time, which you've already done. But again, it's a little bit of Big Brother stuff. I actually am more interested in the fire marshal part and how we can, you know, maneuver that or find some sort of compromise, because this is actually out of Sheridan County. I mean, the bill originates out of Sheridan County because there's a disagreement between the schools. I think it's two. Is it two or one? I can't remember. Anyways, it's
both.
Yeah. And they're having a disagreement with the fire marshal right now. And so
and
that's where this is coming.
That fire marshal oversees us, and that fire marshal actually is the one that wrote us a letter and said there will be a liability if you use devices that are not approved by us.
Yeah. So
I want to come back to what Barry said. There's some consistency we can write with policy that all school districts are doing the same thing. That's huge for me, all right? And get into that piece. And if we can carve out a negotiation piece, that would be super good. And I'll be transparent, Tac 1 training, when we get down to active, if it's about active shooter, one of the things we do is teach our kids and our staff is how to barricade the doors or to prevent people from getting in. So that's something that, I mean, active shooter situations, that's kind of where most of these concerns came into play with active shooter. I think the fire marshal is taking into consideration if they can't enter a room because of a fire because of the devices that are available to lock doors. So just kind of like what Senator Crago just said, is carving out some terminology that we can all live with, but then be consistent around the state with policies.
So Charles, you've talked about school safety and shootings and whatnot. There is a bill in front of legislature about handguns in the school. Where is it at right now? You know?
So there's two. There's going to be
two.
The other one, so the bill from last year has not come out yet. It will, I'm sure, drop soon, which that will be a House bill, which it was House Bill 125 last year. I don't know what number it will have this year, but my guess is it might come out at House Bill 125 again, which is why we haven't seen it, because we haven't hit that number yet. But it will come again. It will likely be exactly like it was last year as the governor vetoed it.
It sounds like it.
There's another bill that's on this list. It's a Senate bill, which has a little bit different requirements, and it's an enhanced concealed carry, which requires additional training to carry in schools or other public buildings, and that was sort of an attempt at a compromise. I don't think it goes anywhere. Probably when it gets to the House, it might pass the Senate, but I doubt it goes anywhere in the House. And so that's just my prediction. Take it for what it's worth. Prediction only.
So that is, do you guys have an attempt at reconciliation? If the House wants one bill and the Senate wants the other, do you set up a committee to try to iron out the differences, or is it just an up or down?
Well, you only do that within the particular bill, right? So, for example, I'll just give you an example. So the House could pass last year's version. The Senate literally could take the version that's been produced in the Senate or introduced in the Senate and amend it into the House version, and then you'd have a...
That's true.
Then you have a conference committee at that point. But only within one bill. You can't do it across multiple bills. It's only within one. And so that becomes difficult because we have constitutional restraints on what we can do within an individual bill. You can't change the original purpose of the first bill. Now, you can change the terminology. So you could take one type of concealed carry or concealed carry within public buildings and amend in a different one, as long as the general topic is the same.
The original intent.
So if I can... Is it presently that you can carry a concealed weapon in a public place, just not a school? Am I correct on that? No.
No, actually, it is not that. I mean, it depends on what type of public building you're talking about. So there's various levels of where you can or can't go. For example, you can't carry in the Capitol. They're working on that. I mean, And you can't carry in the courthouse, right?
I knew that. Yeah.
And so it just depends on the building.
What kind of public building?
Yeah.
Okay.
And what their rules are. Yeah. I mean, right now, it's what we're really doing. Right now, it depends on each individual governmental entity. What this bill really does is created preemption. And it says state is going to control every public building in the state of Wyoming, whether they own it or not. And they're going to decide what you do with your building. And that's really, I mean, it's really a preemption bill. Mm-hmm. It's what it is.
So sorry to cut you off, Marilyn.
No, that's all right. He knows a lot more than I do.
That's not true.
About, he has a lot more
paper. About the,
I just have more scars.
About the laws, you know, that exist. But I do know that I'm real concerned about the gun-free bill.
The which one?
The gun-free zone bill. I'd like to hopefully be able to have some amendments to it. But I think the more local control we have, the better off we are.
Will you share some of those concerns, Marilyn? Like, give us something like the actual, like, what are, when you say I have some concerns, like, what?
Well,
just give me specific.
It makes me nervous to think that you can have a gymnasium full of folks concealed carrying, and the school board may not have anything to say about that. Now, is there something constitutionally on that? I know right now the school districts can have teachers, staff carry if they want to, but just a carte blanche concealed carry, anybody walking into a gym or something like that. I feel like with law enforcement that I've talked to are pretty nervous about it as well. There's all kinds of scenarios you can come up with, and I'm concerned about the liability that it puts on the schools if they do that. If someone gets hurt, gun gets in the wrong hands, somebody else gets shot that shouldn't have got shot. I know it with active shooter things, law enforcement's trained to run to the shooter. They're going to come in the building, and if they see somebody else with a gun, they may just shoot them. And so I have a concern about that. There's just a lot of different things. So I'm not opposed to the Second Amendment. I think we all need to be able to carry our guns all right. I'm all for that. I'm hoping that maybe we can do a few things to make the bill a little bit better.
Do you think this is going to pass this year, though?
Sure pass. I do. Do you think? I think it will.
So last year it passed both houses with veto-proof majorities, and I mean huge majorities.
And there's no way that Governor Gordon will veto it again.
He might, but he doesn't have it. It will pass early enough in the session that if he does, it will get there will be an override. So it will pass.
Yeah.
Just being honest. I mean, that's what it looks like. That's the lay of the land, and how the only thing we're thinking about is, you know, for example, I'm really worried about the liability end of it as well. I mean, for the school and for law enforcement, because when they walk through the door, when the cops come in the door, the sheriff's deputies come through the door, they're shooting anybody that's holding the gun. They're not asking questions. If you're holding the gun, you're gone. And they have no way to manage that risk, right? They don't have the time. There's no way to do that. And that's my biggest concern is we may end up shooting the wrong people because that's their job. And so that's one of my biggest concerns with it. To be honest with you, the people that want to pack a gun into the school are already doing it anyways. You just don't know, right? I mean, I can walk around the floor on the legislature and point out all sorts of people that are packing guns against the, you know, in violation of the law or the rule. It's just the way it is. And so I'm less worried about that part of it as I am is now, you know, people will be more emboldened to, you know, do that. And when, yeah, exactly. And cowboy up, right? And then they're going to get hurt or killed. And that's what I'm really concerned about.
Or get someone else killed that shouldn't have been
so Barry,
shot.
Freedom Caucus people, are they going to throw a monkey wrench into a lot of this stuff? You know, with Gordon vetoing bills and whatnot?
Well, I mean, So a lot of those bills are part of their legislative plan, right? That's what so a lot of those bills that got vetoed. And so we will see, if you've read the news recently, I mean, those are some of the bills that they're bringing out right away, which fine. I mean, heck, I voted for a lot of them, so I'm not necessarily opposed to that. But on the flip side of that is we still want to do everything with a measured approach, right? We want to make sure what we're doing is the right thing. That we don't want to do it just because the governor vetoed it. We want to pass laws because it's the right thing to do, and we want to make sure that they're done properly, and we still vet them and still go through the process. So do I think that to answer your question, not necessarily.
Do they have enough pull to change people's voting the way they would vote, whether it be the House or Senate?
No. Because they, so, I mean, that particular group has a very large majority in the House.
In the House, yeah.
But, so would that be an amendment that they tack on to protect law enforcement from this situation? Or is that, you guys have to go into a whole other law and say, okay, now for our police responders, we've got to give them some cover or they're not going to go in, which would be a nightmare.
I think there's a way to do it within the bill.
In that bill? Okay. That was my concern.
Now, whether we can get that done, I don't know.
Doing
I
mean, the amendments, that's yeah. where I see the only chance we have is trying to get some amendments attached.
And that's just something that we've thought. I mean, there were several attempts to amend the bill with some things like that. For example, one of the solutions that I had kind of thought of was if you're going to, in particular in the school situation, if you're going to walk into a school, you have to sign, you at least have to sign in and say, hey, I'm packing a gun. So at least in our small town, if there is a shooting situation, they can stop at the front desk and say, okay, we know there's these two people in the school today with a gun. We're not going to shoot them, right? We know they're, in theory, they're friendlies.
But only if they do.
Only if they sign in. And they may not, right?
Like by law, they're not actually required to do that, right?
But not today.
Not today.
That was one of the things that someone had thought of, including myself. Like,
that was part of the conversation
that's
with the WSBA because there was like four resolutions that came before the Wyoming State School Board Association on this particular bill. And that was, there was a gentleman, I'm not going to even try and quote where the heck he was from, but he was previously in law enforcement, and that was one of his concerns as well. And he said, you know, as far as like concealed carry permits, the only person you have to tell is the law enforcement. Mm-hmm. Well, in bigger school districts, like they're okay to afford possibly an SRO. In smaller districts, we can't afford that. However, we are very fortunate in Johnson County that we have good collaboration with our law enforcement and all of our people here. And so they're willing. But when it's on the line, I get what you're saying. And so, it, again, like you said, there's probably people that are doing it that will never know, and they're going to do it anyways, and that's this is going to happen, the same thing with this.
So just they might stop at the desk, they might know. Whether you know them or not, I think I'm a pretty recognizable guy. Not many people were built like a square basket with no neck. But when we did our TAC 1 training, and they came around the corner, and this is Charles, they didn't know who I was. Mm-hmm. So again, when you are amped up and you are going and you're going to that, there's just some scenarios. Everybody has to understand there's a risk being concealed carry. And so those are things that I think we're all taking into consideration. My bigger concern is because Senator Crago's right. I've got to get used to Senator. I'm sorry.
You can just call me Barry. How about we roll with that? That's easy.
We'll go with that. But it's that intimidation factor. Somebody walks into a parent meeting or you're with a teacher or you do some, it's that intimidation factor that might come at us. So I think a lot of those things come to the table too when we start looking at it. And so I told these guys and I'll tell you guys that I've asked Heidi to schedule a meeting tomorrow with Kaylin. I think it is definitely time to survey the staff and the community and hear what their input is. So we're not basing our thoughts on opinions. We're basing it on what our community feels so they can have those facts while they're down there. So that's kind of where we're at. Because there's a lot to it. I've asked insurance, a couple times, Connie, three or four, maybe five. What is that going to do for our insurance? And, they're not really answering that question because there is no answer to that yet until they know where this actually passes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there will be a liability or, more importantly, there will be no liability because they say they're not going to cover anything like that. So we'll have to buy some type of rider insurance.
We don't want to get totally locked in on one. What other highlights do you guys have, or are you putting thought into?
So the one thing I would mention, and I'm, you know, mentioned this to Charles, is we roll into recalibration after, you know, over the interim. I think that's something we all, especially the smaller districts like ours, need to pay attention to, because that's going to be a very big discussion. Very, very big, very important, and it will, you know, create our future or not. Depending on how that goes, it could be super harmful for the smaller districts like ours.
So for those of you that are new board members, so recalibration is every 5 years, so that's scheduled to happen this summer, so after legislation. So when we start talking about that recalibration, that's where they come in and they look at the funding model and how schools are funded. So that would be something, if they don't just do a desk audit, which Barry said they're going to probably do a full board, that will be some focus points that we have on attending those meetings and make sure we're watching.
To give you an example,
so if you look at House Bill 21 and it talks about school finance, routine maintenance, and co-workers, It's not about the bill itself. It's the wording. It says they're changing the model formula. Anytime you change a model formula, I want to know what the end result is for us. So the bill might sound great, but we don't know how they're going to tweak the formula and what that does to impact us. So anytime you start having conversations about changing the funding model, which is what recalibration is, you need to slow the bus down and say, okay, change it, and then give us an example how that impacts us so we know what that really, how that impacts the final outcome of what our funding looks like, okay? That's just an educational piece.
Barry, other things that I see that are coming up are, tell me how you think they'll go, are the bathroom issues.
There's a bill.
There's several. Yeah,
they've got that. They've got the transgender sports issues.
Yep.
How do you see that playing?
Those will all probably move on, be successful. Yes.
Both of them will. So the bathroom issue will be, you will use the bathroom that you were born with. Yeah, yes. And that's great. I'm glad to hear that.
Yep. Yeah, I think I'm a sponsor on most of those bills.
So you
co-sponsor.
Think they'll pass that also where... sure I get the wording right, transgenders are not going to be allowed to play, a boy's not going to be allowed to play in girls.
Yeah, so that already is the law for 6th through 12th grade, right? So that's all, we did that.
Oh, I didn't know that, okay.
Yep, we did that 2 years ago. Okay. And so what we're going to do now, the bills that are both coming, there's two bills, one from the Senate and one from the House, which is the way we did it last time. Actually, when we did it before, the House bill was mine. And the Senate bill, which ended up passing with Senator Shuler's, she's bringing in an amendment to that to pull in actually all grades and college and the university. The university part will get a little bit, we'll get more pushback on that than anything. And part of that is because it'll probably put at risk our membership in the Mountain West for UW. But it would apply to community colleges and the university. So we'll have to have some discussion about how that looks and what ramifications there will be to that. Because as it is now, like for example, this year in the volleyball, the volleyball issue, we just didn't play. Now it didn't put us at risk of losing our membership in the Mountain West. It just said, we're not gonna play, you forfeit the games. This makes it a crime for that to happen within the state of Wyoming, which creates some different issues, right? So that one we'll get some more pushback and more discussion about that. And then there's also a bill on bathrooms and public spaces. And so that's same discussion, just a little bit different nuance to it.
So then when it comes to property tax, there's a bill pushing for a 25% reduction in property tax. How will that affect schools? Because that's what we're here to talk about.
So as of right now, I mean, all those bills had backfills in them. Oh. So for the time being, I think, for example, the bill that we passed last year that did get vetoed, it did have a backfill in it, which came at a cost of $125 million.
What do you mean backfill? Explain
that. So the way the bill works.
Whatever the deficit is, it comes from somewhere else?
The state makes up the difference out of savings. So we're pulling money out of savings to backfill the schools, backfill the counties. backfill the special districts, everybody. Anybody that received property taxes who got cut would get cut 25%. The state would pay the difference.
So what backfills your savings?
Nothing.
Hoping for
nothing. No, yet nothing.
That's the issue.
That's the question.
Like my bank account.
Yes. So, you know, and I've had we had this discussion a few days ago. It was at a different event, and I'm in support of the backfill temporarily, but long term, that's not the answer.
No, it's not sustainable.
You know, and our hope was to help people heal up a little bit. I mean, that was sort of why I was supportive of it. Is look, let's help people for a couple years, but then at some point, we got to realize that's our, you know, that's the
here's the new budget.
Yeah, but. That being said, I think we're going to have a lot more options with Constitutional Amendment A, but that, as it is structured now, would not have a backfill. That would just lower the assessment rate, and I have not heard where we'll end up on that. We'd have to put a backfill in it. Otherwise, as it passed by the people of Wyoming, we could lower property taxes dramatically, much more than 25%.
So when you talk about a backfill with the Amendment A, because this is directly going to affect schools and all those entities, help me to understand if I'm understanding this, if I'm not doing this, saying this correctly. But is Amendment A, is it to separate commercial and residential? Is that how there would be commercial taxes versus residential taxes? And how, if that's what it is, how will that work when there's residential, like on a commercial ranch? Like how does, you know, like say, like I look at some of the big ranching communities that are around here. We'll just take Camino's, for instance, because that's one that I know. There's five residence properties within that commercial working ranch.
So every residence, no matter where it is, whether it's on Dave's place or our place or Goddard's place, whoever's ranch it's sitting on, it's listed on residential. So a house in the middle of Johnson County is assessed exactly the same as one in downtown Buffalo. So they're both residential.
It will just change within the operation of how the commercial ranch works as opposed
to... No, it will have no effect on those taxes. Okay. So, but what it will do is, so currently before the amendment passed, we had three classes, and residential was lumped in with commercial and any other, which also includes agricultural. All we did was take residential out so that we could lower the assessment rate. So minerals are assessed at 100%. Mm-hmm. Industrial is assessed at 11.5%. And everything else was assessed at 9.5%. The whole purpose of taking residential out was so that we could lower residential from 9.5% to whatever. Right. It has to stay within 4 percentage points of industrial, not of the mineral, but it has to stay within that. Okay. So without lowering industrial, the lowest we can go is 7.5%. Okay. But we can, if we lower industrial to say 10, then you could lower residential to 6.
But it doesn't require necessarily lower. If I read that right, could you tack it up? If industrial is 11, you could go 15 on homes if the legislature chose to.
Yeah, if you don't want to stay in office for very long.
Of course
you could do that. Yeah.
Sure do.
But I don't see that happening anytime in the near future.
It does not say
you can't. But that was never the intention, nor would that ever fly. But yes, you're right, it could happen. So that, to answer your question, that was the whole point, was so that we could lower that assessment rate. Now, you lower it from 9.5% to, you know, down to 6%, you're talking a fairly large percentage, you know, much more than 25% drop in your taxes on residential.
And it would be across the board. It wouldn't. You know, people say, well, so this exemption, there's so many exemptions out there.
Exemptions are qualifications.
And so you get an exemption, I don't. They get one, you don't. But this would be across the board.
I'll just say it. I'm just going to take it on a personal level here. So I'm a sole proprietor in my business, right? And I actually rent within a commercial property. And so, like, however that looks, whatever... that commercial property owner whatever does with their taxes, I mean, anybody that's in business would be like, well, I have to pass that on to you as the proprietor of that business that builds my thing, or, you know, that rents my spot. So then that makes mine go up. So then I'm going to charge Travis more for his haircut.
Charge more for my hair.
So, like, do you see what I'm saying? Like, this tax, how the inflation, and this is, I'm small fry girl right here. But I just look at that, and there's other entities within communities around the state that the effect is going to be great.
Yeah, so yours shouldn't go up, though. I mean, as a result of Amendment A, that's, yours should not go up.
I would like to say mine would not go up.
Yeah.
Well, is what I would like to hear.
I can't guarantee what other people are going
to
do.
I'm just
but,
telling you what I would like to hear. Yours would not, Lynette.
Yeah, and no one's bringing that bill. I mean, that's not on the list of things that are going to happen today, tomorrow, or 10 years from now.
I mean, part of our job as school board members are to look for, you know, look out for the generation. Look out for these kids. Look for what's following next. Educate them the best that we can. Give them all the tools that we can so that they can go, because they're going to be where we're at, right? Yep. And taxes, I mean, friends, it's part of life.
Right.
It is. Our grandparents said, death and taxes, man. It's real.
Well,
no, it's no joke.
And the other thing, too, that just happened is the property tax initiative. There's enough signatures now that Secretary of State certified that. And in 2026... Mm-hmm. That'll be on the ballot, and it's 50% cut.
And there will not be enough state money to backfill.
There's no way to backfill that. So that's coming up, and that will definitely, it's something the school board and all the special districts and everybody need to think about, because that's not very, it sounds, well, 2000.
No,
that's tomorrow.
It's going to be here, and that's going to be something that everybody needs to be thinking about as well.
For real.
Gary, on the two things that are coming to Wyoming, how will they be taxed? Like, you have your nuclear plant there at Kemmer. You know, oil and gas, you have an ad valorem tax. How is that taxed? And then the rare minerals there at Upton, how will that be taxed?
So, rare earths, they'll pay severance. Yep, just like every other mineral. Yeah, and there's a miscellaneous severance tax section within Title, whatever it is, Title 14.
Is it based on the minerals that they sell?
Yes, it's based on what they sell and the value of
their
that
growth,
sale.
Yeah,
just
sales.
Like, you know, our uranium out here in the eastern part of the county, same thing. Mm-hmm. When they pull it out of the ground, whatever the market value is on that day, they pay a tax based on that.
So then when you talk about Kemmer, how's that tax on the amount of energy that they produce?
Well, that's a good question, because right now we don't really have a good tax system set up for that.
No nuclear stations.
And so that's something that...
So you'll look at what other states do and maybe...
Yep. That's something that's going to be on everybody's radar. Now, that's a 10-year project. We're 3 years into it, so we have 7 or 8 years to figure that out.
Yeah.
But I think there is a bill on electrical generation, and that's how you would tax it, right? So it would be an electrical generation tax, because right now there isn't anything else. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously they'll be paying personal property tax for the facility, and it's going to be highly valuable, but what that amounts to on a statewide basis is not much compared to the generation. Mm-hmm.
So and this may be a little off course, but so the big monstrosity they're building over there in Meteetse, will that be taxed, or will it not be taxed because it falls under religion?
Probably will. It probably will be exempt.
It'll be exempt.
Yep.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Okay, question. So this one isn't highlighted in Charles, and so this was another piece of the WSBA that I just took a little ditty away from, and I see that, Barry, you're sponsoring the Hathaway Scholarship Amendment thing, the bill, House Bill 36, and then House Bill 46, the Homeschool Freedom Act. And so we attended a session at our WSBA, was talking about the Wyoming State School Board Association, the standards for schooling in the state of Wyoming. And they're looking at those, and you know, the governor, the RIDE initiative that the governor did. What are your thoughts? Where are you with, as far as like the homeschooling, the accountability pieces, or understanding the accountability pieces with homeschooling as opposed with, because now there's a lot, public schools have a lot of competition. I mean, even in Johnson County, we have a lot of competition, which, personal opinion here, I'm going to give it. I think competition is healthy, super healthy, healthy for families, healthy for kids. But where are you with that? And like, how do we tie in that Hathaway looking at all of these different options as far as like different schooling options? I mean, there's in other towns within our state, there's lots of options out there.
Right.
Like, are those tied at all? Like, what are your pieces like? What are you looking at?
It's a good question. It's a complicated one.
It is.
So
just me listening, it's complicated.
I'm a big proponent of all types of education. You know, those of you who know me know that. You know,
that. Yeah.
Both of my kids went to the Christian school and then went to the high school. One's about to be done. And I tout that success story everywhere I go, right? I mean, competition is good, but it doesn't have to be a competition either. There's a lot of things that they can do together, right? So that's, for example, that's why I've been supportive of the educational savings account, so that people do have choice. But I've made a caveat with that I will never do that at the expense of public education, right? So I do not want to support pulling money from public education to fund a different type of education. I mean, our country is based and founded on public education. We're the most educated society in history, right? So that's because of public education and our tax dollars going to that. Now, do I see a place for other types of education? Absolutely. And so I think I've been supportive of those types of things all along. I'm going to continue. Charles and I talk about this a lot, we have over the years, and he knows where I stand on a lot of that. I'm not ever attacking public education with my votes. I just want everybody to have choices. Mm-hmm. And most people are going to end up choosing public education at the end of the day anyways. I mean, just like, you know, our family did it, you know, we did both and it worked great. And I think most other people end up doing that too. You know, I just know a lot of those people. I run in those circles. That's where a lot of them end up. And so it's a little bit of both. Hathaway, the whole point of that is so that we extend that opportunity to a larger portion of our kids. There's money in that fund, right? We're not spending it all, and we're not going to run out of the money for that fund. And so let's get as many kids educated in all the different types of education that we can. Not every kid is going to go get a four-year degree. And to be honest with you, I don't want them all. I mean, we need people that do other jobs, all the jobs, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's the whole point of this. It's there's a big shift, right? And let's fund that, and let's make sure that every kid gets the education that suits him or her best, not what we think should suit him or her, or what society thinks that him or her should be educated. Let's get them out there. Let's get them out working and doing what they want to do. So that's the whole point of that, is let's expand the opportunities for everybody.
That's fair. A lot of that, and that's what I was thinking, like, when they were talking about the standards and looking at, like, the profile of a graduate, they're looking, they see that shift is there. I mean, as far as, like, you know, what was it, 10, 15 years ago, computer, computer, computer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no jobs in that now. And they're like, hey, we don't have any plumbers, we don't have any electricians, we don't have anybody to build this house. We don't have anybody to maintain the HVAC system at Metal Arc Elementary in Buffalo.
Okay.
And so, yeah, it's those types of things. And so I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, and on the homeschool thing,
yeah.
I've always thought it was sort of strange that the school district is overseeing that anyways.
I'm
totally fine with them deciding how they want to educate their kid. The accountability really isn't there anyways right now, so why are we putting an additional job on this facility and the people in it that it doesn't do anything anyway?
Right.
Right. So. Yep. I agree with that.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
I mean, we had this conversation a little bit ago. Do I think they should at least notify you that they're homeschooling their kid? Probably. That's probably fair enough. So you can not worry about truancy and that they're meeting the requirements of the law, because they still have to educate their kid. That they have to do. How they do it is up to them, and I think that that's okay.
Yes. Other questions or thoughts? Charles, you got any of these we want to highlight? Anything else you want to?
I just think, a lot of them, some of them are highlighted, they might not even make the floor. So in reality, that one, the K-12 uncertified personnel, and just allows the school district, each school district, to develop their own policy on who can teach kindergarten or who can teach this. I think we need to stay away from that. That's going to be a competition of, well, they allow this person to do this. There's certifications behind being a certified teacher. Because let me tell you where that goes. Then that comes back to the burden of the school district providing the professional development to make sure they can teach what they're supposed to be or teaching correctly. So
yeah.
Got to be careful with that one.
But just to chime in, that one will make the floor since both the president of the Senate and the speaker of the House are sponsors.
Oh. Yeah.
So we'll watch that. But it's not as simple as saying it's a solution to how are we going to get teachers. Because if we just hire somebody that doesn't have an education, then it's going to fall on that professional development of the district to what do you do to train them to be effective in the classroom. So that just got to be careful with how we do some of that. So yeah, it's going to make the floor, so we'll be watching that one. And then the other one I brought up to Barry... in our conversations, if you turn to the last page of Summer Vacation Preservation Act, you got to be so careful with recalibration coming up. You're reducing the number of days. It says in there, districts shall not basically reduce salaries.
It's a lot of options for local control.
So if we don't reduce our salaries, and we have to keep it here, and they come in behind recalibration, and they fund us less because you're not funding... You're not teaching as many days, you have to do it. But more importantly, that's 15 days that classified staff, your paras, you're taking away days from classified people. So to keep and retain classified people in some of our,
which is
important year-round, they're going to go probably start looking for other jobs that are more year-round jobs. So you got to be very careful when you got to look at the ripple effect on something that everybody says is pretty simple.
Yeah,
so when you start reducing days or numbers, it might look good for a certified person who has, they're going to get the same amount of pay whether they work 170 or 185 days.
Yeah.
But what about all the classified staff that don't work during those days? So that's a 15-day reduction.
Yeah.
Or do you find a job for them to do 15 days, but the funding doesn't support them for an extra 15 days? So you got to think of some of those things when these bills go through. Fair?
Yeah. It has law of unintended consequences written all over it.
And you can go and approve an alternative calendar, and we can do all that stuff. There's just more hoops to jump through. It's not going to limit you to go back to that, but the key points for me is the formula that Barry talked about with recalibration, what does that look like, and then what are you doing with classified staff?
So I have a question.
Go ahead.
So on House Bill 86, came out of Joint Appropriations, Public Property and Buildings Amendment. It says it refines the definition of resident contractor and adds an exception for emergencies, requires the district submit a plan for routine maintenance and outlines what must be included. Is that a problem?
A plan
requires that you submit a plan.
Jump in.
Yes.
So we did this bill on all other state buildings last year or the year before, and really what it is it's creating a long range plan for maintenance purposes, because we did not do a good job of that, of saying, okay, next year we need to work on What buildings do we need to work on next year? What buildings do we need to work on the year after that? And literally a 10-year plan of maintenance, major maintenance, not just routine, but routine and major.
Okay.
I think this is saying we're
I think they want a statewide system.
It's just stating it that it will be okay.
Yep.
So that's not going to be
a
burden for
the district. It's a planning tool, but it's how it's implemented once it's all passed.
Yeah.
At the state level is
all right.
Charles, so when, okay, and I'm trying to think, when we had that evaluation of all the buildings with Levi, and it's fuzzy on me, was my first couple of years, but remember there was a something with, that I believe it was Clear Creek School had something that within the State Facilities Commission that met a hire on their whatever, and Metal Arc that was built in 1978 was like down like to 18, and Clear Creek that was built in 2003 or whatever year it was.
So there's a discrepancy.
How, like, what's that going to do?
There's a discrepancy. There's a discrepancy between when the state came in and did an evaluation of our buildings in a blizzard. Let's be honest. There's a huge discrepancy. They were here 2 days as to where we did a full month evaluation. So we are using that data to drive like the projects that we're trying to push through with component projects. So there is a discrepancy.
We're using the discrepancy that we had a blizzard when he came and looked?
No,
we're using Levi's study.
Levi's study. Hold on,
Charles,
I looked at that
Charles
paperwork.
And John are arguing the state numbers where they fall compared to that. So you're absolutely right. School's dead. So, but the state is really working with us to say, hey, this is a great evaluation. This needs to be moved up. This is one of the reasons why we got the component project. So this isn't the only component project we're going to look for. So we're using that data. When you talk about maintenance, that's a different story. So a maintenance, what they're trying to get away from is, you know, the anticipation that schools aren't maintaining their buildings in order for the state to build them a new one.
To build a new one.
So, you know, evidence of coming back and saying, look, we've done routine maintenance on all these facilities, so why should we why should the state or somebody else, taxpayers, be paying money for something you haven't done your routine maintenance on and you broke it? So what are we doing to maintain our buildings, to maintain them from a longer period of time? But then, like what Barry's saying, is we can start strategically planning, saying, look at this thing is 50 years old. We got to start budgeting for it now. It's kind of what we're trying to do right now with going around our buildings, doing asset tagging, trying to find things that are old and broke. You know, because when it comes time to replace it, you got to have money in the savings account to replace it. Yeah. So being consistent around the state with how we maintain our facilities, I think, is a good idea. My question to you is the implementation of that great idea that usually is sometimes causes the hiccup. So if we're going to do a statewide software where we put it in, we maintain it, it's tied to one. We shouldn't be having three different softwares that create something different. Let's try to do something that doesn't require a lot more maintenance as we get the system going. But let's be honest, if this is a new system we come into play, the upfront of getting that up and running is going to take some time and money to make sure that software is working. I'm okay with it because that's what we're trying to do anyway.
We're working on this.
So we're already doing, so I'm not opposed to it.
I do have another question, and it's gonna kind of go back to the weapons and the you know, concealed carry. Is anyone looking at mental health? It's got to be a conversation. Like within those bills that are going to pass, like.
So the answer to that is twofold.
I get it. Like, I can't deem you crazy just like you can't deem me crazy, even though...
I can deem myself crazy,
exactly. Do you know what I'm saying?
I'm about there.
But, like, within the county, we support... I mean, there's a couple suicide preventions. I mean, a lot of those... Mm-hmm. Granted, and those are grant, you know, different grant funded. But, like, is there anything within that mental health, like...
There likely will not be the next couple years. So, you know, there's a lot of us that believe in that issue. We work on it. You know, it's, like you said, it's really important to our county, this part of the world.
Yeah.
But I do not see much of that discussion happening over the, just knowing the personalities and the characters in the play, so to speak. We're not going to have that discussion very
often.
The governor.
We did, yeah. I mean,
yeah,
I
so
helped,
they,
but
they did deal with it somewhat.
Yes, yeah. So it's in the right now. It's currently funded. Mm-hmm. It's currently funded in the standard budget for, like, for example,
for
the 988.
A higher rate than, let's say, 5 years ago.
Right.
Yes and no. I mean, for example, the hotline, you know, we did the 988 hotline. That's funded through next year. After that, I don't know. We were able to put, last year I helped put $10 million in the budget also for the trust fund for that, which we had created the year before. So, I mean, my thought was, well, let's just have a set of pool of money aside to fund that in perpetuity. The call hotline, we didn't get enough money put in there, so I don't know what will happen with that. But to be honest with you, I'm not overly optimistic that we'll fund that thing next year or fund it. It's, you know, right now we have two call centers. I don't know what that looks like, but the problem's much bigger than a call center, right? Right, and so I actually don't think we're pouring near enough money into the problem. I think it's something that we should be spending a lot more money and a lot more resources and actually having more conversations about it. And, you know, dumping money into it doesn't solve the problem either, but dumping money in strategic manner does. And so figuring out what we can do, where we can do it, and that requires a lot of conversations across a whole bunch of different people and a whole bunch of different groups. And to that end, I don't think we're going to be having that conversation the way we should be for the next couple years. And so that's why money, you know, regardless of the money, I'm just worried that we're going to kind of, I mean, there'll be a lot of us talking about it, including myself, but there's only so much we can do if we can't pass legislation to put it into effect. So the conversation will be happening. It just may not be very successful. But what one thing I've you know, asked everybody every time this conversation or this topic comes up, I should say, is give us ideas. You know, if anybody has ideas about how to help on this problem, even if it's the littlest thing, those little things eventually can add up to helping a great deal. And so just let me know. Let Marilyn know if you have something that comes up that you think of. Hey, you're just driving down the road one day and say, oh, I wonder if we could do this. I wonder if this would even help the tiniest bit. Reach out to us, because we maybe can put that into practice.
And right now we're fortunate that our governor is really sees it as a very important issue and is doing everything he can to.
So when you talk about that, Charles, have they increased any funding for counselors within schools and the funding model?
A recalibration question. You have one here.
Well, there's three or four different folds to this. So the answer to that is no, they haven't increased the funding model for what we do for counselors, because what we receive for counselors is based on ADM. Mm-hmm. However,
ourselves have increased, haven't we?
We fund more than the model, but they've done nothing to the model to even bring it up to where we're at, okay? So, but there's been money put towards one-time money, so to increase counseling services, but I'm just going to be I'm on the CIFDAC committee that's supposed to revisit the rules, and the rules haven't been established yet. So you have to return the money if you don't spend it correctly, and if you're going to spend the money, you have to track and report each person what you're doing, and then so if you tell people you're going to be tracked, they don't want it, they want the services. So there's a lot of little things that people don't. It's real simple to throw money at it, I agree, but it doesn't solve the problem. Mm-hmm. You got to get people that want to have the services, and then you have to have the people that can provide the services, mm-hmm. and those people that can provide the services have to be within the budget that you've been allowed. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of, but then you get something going like that after 2 years, and then there's no more funding. Then we're coming back to having a conversation of, mm-hmm. why start a program that you know in 2 years you can't continue to support, and then people are going to be upset because you didn't finish with the program. I mean, that's some of the things that we have to think about. So, for you as Johnson County to know, we've applied for the money and said, yes, we'll use it. However, I'm going to use it according to the rules applied behind it, because if you don't reply to the rules you apply, then you return it. Then that would be really hard for me to come back to you and say, we're going to return $63,000 is what you qualify for because we didn't follow the rules of the game.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of different questions that can we provide remote counseling? Yes. But again, when it's all said and done, what are we doing? How are we tracking? How do we know it works? Because they have to be, I have to support the fact is they want to know that the money that they put into it is actually making an impact. That's a good thing. I mean, we all want to say, hey, we put $2 million into this. What was the bang for the buck we got? So you just got to put a lot of different things in motion. It's not just simply saying we can do this. I would like to say take that money and put it towards the counselors that we don't get reimbursed for to help support that. So that was my conversation on the video. I said, so how about all of us districts that don't get enough counseling support? Why can't we use that money to support us over the next couple of years? So that's my approach. So yes, yes, and yes to all of that.
Yeah. Well, and what are, like, on House, and I, neither one of you are in the sponsor, I don't know like what the committees look like, but House 21, the ban on cell phones. I'll tell you, in Johnson County, we've been working on this one for a while, so like kind of been ahead of the game. Again, I'm going to kind of hit a little bit of mental health. Senate Bill 21, sorry. Mm-hmm. And while I like the idea of limiting use, I want that to be our problem, not it to come from the Senate or the legislation. I want it to be like, because like I said, we as Johnson County, let me tell you, we got a pretty darn good committee. We've done some really hard work. We're discussing and trying to figure out. Charles has done a wonderful job reaching out within our community to a gamut of different businesses, different people, and the committee's made up of like a wonderful array of this community. And I would almost gander to say that some mental health things, you know, with these tiny ones, like I've had teachers talk with me that, you know, first grade kindergarten teachers, that 30 seconds after that bell rings in the school, they've got little six-year-olds doing this number, not even saying bye to their friends, not saying bye to their teachers. You know, it's an instant this. And not saying that it's every kid, but it is happening, and that I feel like that's kind of a pathway into some mental health work as well, starting young. What are your guys' thoughts on that whole, like the Senate taking hold on that?
You want to go first? Because I got a good answer for this one.
I've always thought that cell phones in schools were very distracting. I think it's hard for the teachers, and from what I'm kind of hearing out there, when they finally do, I don't remember if it's Riverton where they've done this, students were really, after the initial shock, were glad. Mm-hmm. And that
there's several districts that
and it's like,
the
you know,
this year.
Parents overseeing kids, putting its responsibility there, and sometimes as a kid, you kind of like your parent to say no. And so I'm very behind the cell phone bill, but Mike, you're saying you'd like to keep that more on a local level decision, not a statewide legislative.
And my reasoning being behind, like, well, I get that with like mm-hmm. the no. What we have figured out through our surveying of our community and just like talking within our community, we got to educate. It's not necessarily educating the kids, because let me tell you, friends, they know way more than we do about those things than we'll ever know. Mm-hmm. It's educating those parents that are raising the kids. Because unfortunately, I mean, there's things that I don't even know, but a child knows, you know, and we put out a thing and a survey, and the survey came back. Yes, it's a problem. I don't want to learn how to fix that problem, though. I don't. I know it's a problem. Yeah, I totally agree with that. But I don't. I'm not interested in learning how to help me learn to help my kid to not have it be a problem.
Because it's a hard problem.
Because it's a way hard problem.
It's not simple.
No.
Barry has the
I'm
answer,
waiting for this.
Oh, yeah.
I dropped the hand.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I was at a city council meeting last night. And I was telling them, and I mean, we're only seeing the tip of the iceberg on mm-hmm. bills, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, so, mind you, LSO is telling us, which for those of you that don't know, LSO is our staff at the legislature. They do all of our bill drafting and whatnot. LSO is telling us we're going to have the most bill drafts ever. And we're going to have what their belief is upwards of 800 bills. And, you know, right now there's...
Yeah.
200 available for you to view, not even 200, right? So we're talking one quarter of what's been asked to be drafted is visible to the public. And so a lot more are coming, and a lot of them are going to deal with local control. I don't know what percentage, but it will be a very large percentage of these bills will have a local control flavor to them. What I said last night at the city council is apparently, I said, I trust my local elected officials, and that includes all of you very much. I'm happy you serve me and my family and the citizens of our great county. I must trust you much more than a lot of the other legislators do. I don't trust their folks. I don't know. I just believe in local control. Like, I want to be able to walk into this room and have a say in what happens at our school. And when we make all those decisions in Cheyenne, you don't get to do that.
That's right.
And so, do I agree with you? 100%. That being said, a lot of this stuff's going to pass. I mean, because it's popular. Right, it's they all have these buzzwords in them, right? And even some of the stuff I'm supporting, you could say, "Hey, Barry, you're taking away local control," right? But I mean, in my heart, that's what I believe. I believe in local control, and I trust you guys to make all the right decisions. And when I don't, I'll come. You know, if I don't agree, I will come let you know. But at the end of the day, you're elected to represent us, and that's glad you're here. So. And that's what I told him last night. Say the same thing sitting here, but be prepared. This is just the tip of the iceberg. There will be so much more.
So, Barry, the other thing I can say to what you said is it's not a bad deal to come from the state, the top either. So we have uniformity throughout schools. It's a shame when a kid, you have a policy in this school and that kid moves to a different school and he has to learn a whole new thing, or you know, you're at a sporting event and those kids can use their phone, but yours can't. And so I don't know that it's a bad deal to come from the top.
It depends on the, I mean, there are, yeah, I mean, that's why I said there are some things that I've said that probably dabble, take away some control from you or other local entities. And I've helped support some of those. That's a balancing, right? That's a balancing act, but it's difficult. I mean, that's what we get paid the big bucks to go down there and decide where we should end up. Yeah, I get paid a lot. You didn't know that?
Marilyn missed that memo.
Yeah. But we make so much money down there, and can't believe it.
We understand. I assure you.
I know you do. So, anyways, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity to just sit here and talk about these things. So good to know what the local board's thinking.
Well, I think everybody knows we have a problem.
Yeah.
And we need to deal with the problem.
Well, and I know the sponsor of this bill, and I know her very well, and she's an ex-educator, right? And so she's doing this because she's wanting to give her school board back home a backstop. She wants the school board to say, hey, this we have to do this because the state told us. I mean, she's not trying to take away control. She's trying to give them control through a different mechanism. I mean, that's what's happening with this particular bill.
You're not the bad guy. She's going to be the backstop.
That's right. She wants to be the bad guy. That's exactly right. And she's doing it for her people, not against them. And I mean, she was a basketball coach and teacher for, she retired. That's, yeah. Yeah, it's Coach Jay's
Coach
best
Jay
friend
Brady.
From way
yes.
back days. Yeah, exactly.
All right, gang. Anybody got final thoughts, questions, or ideas that we need to run by? Is there anything we can do to help you guys out there?
Just stay in our ear. Yeah, exactly.
Text, call.
Yeah. Well,
I'm a lot better at a phone call than I am.
So while we have these amazing people here, how many people think they're going to be able to travel down and to the School Boards Association and do the dinner that Saturday night and be with them? February 1st, you travel, 2nd and 3rd, and come back. So.
What time do you guys usually get back?
Well, because it's going to be wonderful roads, and it's going to be great, we could be back by 5.
How quick do you need to know, Charles?
Just reservations. If we could know by Monday of next week, that'd be great.
Okay.
But they both committed to those days, and in fairness to them, if we're all going to go, let's make it happen.
I can't remember, do you leave on Saturday or do you leave on
Saturday?
We
do leave Saturday about noon, and then we go down and have dinner with these guys Saturday night. We can either do a tour of the Capitol that night or in the morning. Last year we did the, went in and did both, didn't we? Did we do it at night or just in the morning?
Just the morning.
The morning.
Just the morning, walk through the Capitol, then we had some conversations that got ready for the training with the School Boards Association that afternoon. And then we, I mean, if the weather's bad, we can come back as early as 3, just depending on what the roads are. But we really try to go watch legislation. They introduce us that Monday morning. So Barry would, we'll go to the Senate, they'll introduce us. They'll go to the House, they'll introduce us. You get to see some different things. It's pretty cool. So. Mm-hmm.
Cool. You leave Cheyenne at 5.
No,
we
don't. We
go through a fast food restaurant.
I want to go.
Type scenario.
Does your daughter want to watch my children?
She might.
I'm thinking of people because Luke's working nights, so I might be calling her.
Would your husband be my house?
Yes.
Oh, good. Then I can go.
All righty. Well, thank you guys for the time.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, yeah, thank you so much.
Yep.
This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.